This is Philip Kotler, co-author of Entrepreneurial Marketing. The subtitle is Beyond Professionalism to Creativity, Leadership, and Sustainability. And you are listening to the Marketing Book Podcast.
Welcome to the Marketing Book Podcast, helping you keep up with the smartest thinking in the quickly changing field of modern marketing. And now, here's your host, Douglas Burdett.
Hello, thanks for joining me on the Marketing Book Podcast, where each week I publish an interview with the author of a new marketing or sales book, and which has been named as one of the top marketing podcasts by Forbes and LinkedIn, amongst others. Don't worry about taking notes. You can find links to everything linkable in this episode's website page at marketingbookpodcast.com. And since I get to read every book featured on the show, if I can recommend a specific marketing or sales book or any other resource I know of for whatever challenge you're facing, send me a LinkedIn connection invite with a message that you're a listener, and I will do my best to get you pointed in the right direction. My name again is Douglas Burdett. This episode is sponsored by Future London Academy. Learn business, strategy, finance, and leadership from Spotify, Wolf Olins, Monzo, Pentagram, AKQA, and others with Future London Academy's MBA for Design Leaders. Only 30 spots are available. Apply now at bit.ly/futureMBA. That's bit.ly/futureMBA, or get the link at this episode's website page at marketingbookpodcast.com. I'll tell you more about it in a few minutes. Now let's get on with the show. Today we welcome Dr. Philip Kotler back to talk about the book he has co-authored with Herman Kartajaya, Den Juan Hu, and Jackie Musri, Entrepreneurial Marketing Beyond Professionalism to Creativity, Leadership, and Sustainability, published by Wiley. Philip Kotler is Professor Emeritus of Marketing at the Kellogg School of Management, Northwestern University, where he held the S.C. Johnson & Son Distinguished Professor of International Marketing. He's one of the world's leading authorities on marketing, widely regarded as the father of modern marketing, author of over 90 books, recipient of numerous awards and honorary degrees from schools around the world, and voted as the number one guru in management in the list of top 30 gurus of management 2022. The Wall Street Journal ranks him among the top six most influential business thinkers. He holds an MA from the University of Chicago and a PhD from MIT, both in economics. Philip has an incredible international presence. His books have been translated into more than 25 languages, and he regularly speaks on the international circuit. And interesting fact, this month he will be celebrating his 92nd birthday. Dr. Kotler, happy birthday. Congratulations on entrepreneurial marketing, and welcome back to the Marketing Book Podcast.
Doug, it's a pleasure again to speak and be interviewed by you, because it's always something I treasure.
Oh, well, thank you very much. I really appreciate that. And, sir, I just have to tell you, based on the number of downloads your past episodes have generated around the world, you are by far the most popular guest ever on the Marketing Book Podcast. So I really appreciate you coming back, and the listeners do as well.
Good. Thank you.
So I just had to laugh because your wife, Nancy Kotler, was helping us with some of the audio here. And I remember from your autobiography, this was an earlier episode, where about how you met Nancy. And you wrote about how you went to a mixer and you spotted a beautiful woman with black hair and pretty eyes, and you asked her to dance. And she said yes. And while dancing, you said, "You look like Cleopatra." And she replied, "I am Cleopatra."
Correct.
If I'd heard that, when she said that, I have a feeling you must have thought, she is the one.
Mm-hmm. I did.
And now you have 3 daughters and 9 grandchildren, and you dedicated the book to your 9 grandchildren.
Correct.
So I have an extra copy of the book, and I'm going to award it to one lucky listener. And at the end of the interview, I'm going to tell you how to win it. So the foreword to the book is written by the former CEO of the American Marketing Association, Russ Klein. And I've seen him speak and been a fan of his. And I just wanted to quote one short part of that foreword where he writes, I recommend you keep entrepreneurial marketing within arm's reach as a sequel to Kotler's renowned Marketing Management, now in its 16th edition. Entrepreneurial marketing is a must-read for CEOs, CFOs, CIOs, and other senior staff people. It does an excellent job with accounting and financial analytical tools. It does an insightful job in looking at future developments in marketing and how to remain flexible and alert for the inherent managerial tensions inside any firm. And continuing that, I just want to go to the next page and read a little bit from the prologue to give the listener a sense of what's in here. And this is marketing in the post-normal era. You write, so much has changed in the last years, from technological advances that revolutionized the way we communicate to globe-shaking events like COVID-19. Although much uncertainty surrounds these shifts, one factor remains clear. Business will never be the same, and that includes marketing. In the past, a traditional or procedural approach to marketing might have produced reliable results time and again. In this book, we'll refer to this setup as professional marketing. It is often associated with concepts such as segmentation, targeting, positioning, and product and brand management. The slow-moving, one-step-at-a-time methodology may have been a great fit for a less connected era. That's no longer the case. Today's fast-paced, shifting world calls for a marketing strategy that can fit in everywhere and be agile enough to move when needed. An entrepreneurial approach may be the ticket for organizations to be interconnected, flexible, and results-driven. And finally, although the concept of entrepreneurial marketing isn't necessarily new, a more expanded version is essential. Its original definition referred to a combination of marketing and entrepreneurship elements. However, due to recent developments around the world, this approach must encompass a broader scope, a holistic perspective, if you will, one that integrates all the other departments of a company, one that doesn't remain in a silo as marketing and other functions has often done in the past. It also converges an entrepreneurial mindset and a professional mindset. So, Dr. Kotler, tell us about how this book came about and why you decided to write it.
Well, it turns out that companies, of course, need marketing, and they do it by finding the best marketers they can. Let's call them professional marketers who have learned their marketing, not only from textbooks, but from experience. And that should be enough. Any company should be proud to have the finest professional marketers. Our argument is that it is not enough. It will be good for the short run. That is, those professional marketers will be obsessive about getting all the possible customers they can find and pull in, but that's not enough for the long run. And the reason is you need to expand the company's view of the market opportunities that exist and face the company. And a lot of professional marketers are so knowledgeable about the existing customers. Remember, they're not researching adjacent customers. And they do an excellent job recruiting customers, but you may find that customers are beginning to change what they want. And the marketer may stick to the old recipes for success, and those recipes may no longer work. So we say you need another layer of people in your department called entrepreneurial marketers. Mm-hmm. Now, let me say, does that mean a company needs two levels of marketers, professional marketers and entrepreneurial marketers? Not necessarily. I had an experience in talking to a former executive at Procter & Gamble, and when I said the two layers of marketers would be desirable, he says, well, in our case, we only need one level. All the people we recruit as marketers are entrepreneurial. So by definition, they're not only professional, they're entrepreneurial. So we only have one layer. Well, most companies don't have that luxury of finding the best of the best, and they're always entrepreneurial. They have a lot of wonderful professional marketers who may be very narrow in their vision of producing the maximum sales, but not seeing the opportunities on the side on the left side and on the right side of the business they're in, which would bring about more long-term growth because as entrepreneurial marketers, they would imagine more things for the company over the long run and during changing times.
Interesting. Well, just when marketing becomes more complicated, but the customers are and the way they buy is just not like it used to be. Let me quote from page 3 about marketing blind spots. You write, the term marketing myopia refers to a condition in which a company is too focused on producing goods and services. It overlooks the customer's actual needs and desires. Theodore Levitt introduced the concept in 1960, and it became widespread during the following decades. In response to this issue, many companies adopted a customer-centric approach. This places the customer as the starting point in product and service development. It prioritizes the client experience across multiple touchpoints. The question is, did it work? Perhaps for some. However, this new focus actually led to another set of issues, which we'll call marketing blind spots. What are some of these marketing blind spots?
Yes, we identified 5 of them, and they're mostly familiar to people. The first one is a misalignment of marketing and finance. We can give a whole lecture on that. Namely, decisions by the company are made by the CEO along with the CEO's CFO, Chief Financial Officer. The Chief Financial Officer has a great influence on how much money should go into marketing. And if the CFO believes that marketing has too much budget, he would want to cut the budget of marketing. And the marketer will counter with, oh, you're cutting the essence of what we're doing. So if the two sides, CMOs and CFOs, aren't good with each other, aren't agreeing on what makes sense as a marketing budget, the company is destined to fail. In fact, in my consulting activity, I always ask before I get started, let me have an interview in a separate room with the head of marketing. Now, why? Because I'm going to ask the head of marketing what he thinks of the head of finance. I'm going to have a second room afterwards with only the sales head. And then I'm going to ask the same thing. What do you think of, well, I'm going to have the second room with the finance head, I'm sorry, and ask what does he or she think of marketing. And right then, I'll know if I should really continue with the assignment, because if they don't like each other and they don't have a model, what we might call a return on marketing investment model, where they can agree on the optimum amount to spend on marketing, they're going to have a perpetual problem. So that's the first one, that there's often in many companies misalignment of marketing and finance. Now, there's also a second, and that is what we call a disharmonious marketing and sales relationship. This problem is a surprise to a lot of people. Why wouldn't marketing and sales be the best of friends? Well, you know, the salespeople often say to marketing, you're setting too high a price on the product. We can't sell that number. The quota is infeasible as a quota. So would you reconsider the pricing and quota for us? And by the way, my customers, and I'm the salesperson, they don't remember seeing your ads. You're putting a lot of money into strong ads, but they have no recollection of these ads, or they think they're awful ads. So there's a lot of reasons that two sides may not be working together, just like the problem of the finance and marketing people working together. Actually, I dealt with that problem in a Harvard Business Review article some years ago called Ending the War Between Marketing and Sales. Now, a third blind spot is weak integration of online and offline marketing. Now, most companies always started offline. There was no such thing as online marketing. There wasn't the digital age. And once it started, every store-based company had to figure out not only to get customers coming into the store to buy objects, but to allow the same customers who didn't want to go to the store but wanted to order it online to be able to get online results. Now, it's pretty straightforward to set up an online purchasing situation. Just think of Amazon. Amazon is online on every good that one can imagine wanting to buy. But for the typical company, they have to do some work to supplement their offline selling, which was their traditional selling, with online reach. So it shouldn't matter to the company whether the same product was sold online or offline, even though some of them may want to price a little difference between when the product is purchased online versus offline. So that's a third problem, weak integration of online and offline. The fourth is overlooking human capital. And we sometimes, in a technological age, we think almost everything can be done technologically. That is, the transaction between two people, a buyer and a seller, can be handled in a straightforward, unemotional way. And we think that's not good for your own employees, that they're not machines. Your employees are not machines. They're people. And I actually wrote a book recently, too, called H2H Marketing, Human-to-Human Marketing. That's what H2H means. And always trying to remind companies to see their people at least as human capital that should be invested in and trained well and so on. And the fifth blind spot is a lack of humanity in marketing. In other words, we want marketing to be doing its basic job, which is helping improve people's lives, which really means two things: help improve their well-being and help improve their happiness. That's basically why we buy things from others. We want to be a winner. We want the company selling to be a winner. Every great transaction is producing two winners. If it's only producing one winner and one loser, then it's not going to be repeated again by the buyer. So those are the five blind spots which we can correct.
Very important to keep those in mind. And there have been entire books written about each of these topics. What if I told you that a year from now, you could finally get that chief creative officer promotion, lead a larger team, and have your CFO finally understand the value of design? It all starts with Future London Academy's MBA for Design Leaders. During their 5 2-week modules in London and California, you'll be in the same room with creative leaders from around the world, learning, collaborating, and sharing laughter and tears. You'll go behind the scenes of the top design agencies and most inspiring companies while receiving bespoke mentorship from CEOs, CFOs, and design leaders from Dropbox, Pentagram, Wolf Olins, Zaha Hadid, Architects, and many others. With Future London Academy, you will erase borders, question everything, inspire others, ignite ideas, make friends, challenge the impossible, start a movement, invent solutions, think differently, change the world, and never, never stop learning. Become one of the 30 change makers today. Apply now at bit.ly/futureMBA. That's bit.ly/futureMBA. Or get the link at this episode's website page at marketingbookpodcast.com. So let's get into more about the entrepreneurial marketing. In chapter 2, which is titled From Professional to Entrepreneurial Marketing, you compare and contrast professional marketing versus entrepreneurial marketing. And you write that when you use the term professional to describe marketing, it's often to refer to tendencies toward procedures and bureaucracy, and that in today's world, the professional method of marketing faces several key risks. And you touched on one of those earlier. What are What are some of the advantages and disadvantages of the professional marketing approach?
Well, there's both. The professional marketers offer this advantage. They are so obsessed with the customers. They know them individually or can get information on each of them individually that they drive very hard and they normally get the sales. They're good at getting sales. The negative, however, is they may have blind spots about seeing opportunities for other products that they might propose to the company in addition to what the company sells. In other words, they may come up with new growth ideas for the company if they were more broad-minded about the situation they're in. So we would say that you need both types of thinking, professional marketing to get the sales that meet your goals today, and you need entrepreneurial marketing to keep you living through tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. And being mindful of the macro environment.
Exactly.
So entrepreneurial marketing, can you say more about the characteristics of entrepreneurial marketing?
Well, we have a formula called CIEL, which is the starting point for entrepreneurial marketing. The C stands for creativity. So we're talking about some of the people in the marketing department who have really very good creativity, which you can normally know about just in your interaction with them, which leads them to any morning of the week saying, hey, I saw something, I read something, this is an idea of mine. And then the question is it an idea that could be actually pushed into an innovation, which may mean maybe he sees a new type of product that the company ought to make, or he sees a new way to measure amount sold, or he sees new analytics or something.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea is he or she supplies creativity, that some of which may lead to new ideas on innovation, which don't just stand still. They would be researched, and if there's a positive innovation coming from one of these ideas, you need E, which stands for entrepreneurship, to make sure it is acted on. It's not just buried as an innovation. You may know, by the way, that Kodak originally had the design for a smartphone before we ever saw one, but they buried it.
Right.
So you need creativity followed by innovation, followed by entrepreneurship, and followed by a leadership of the company that welcomes innovation, welcomes the phrase, innovate or die.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the professional marketer takes over, of course, every day doing their job. And the way we judge them is by first their productivity in the use of capital and whether they're improving, even if they're not coming up with innovations or new ideas, creative ideas, are they at least each day trying to improve how they do things? And then do they have a professionalism about their behavior normally? And are they really good managers of what they're doing? So we take these, there are four elements to the entrepreneurial marketing and four elements to good professional marketing. And by the way, they relate to each other up and down and not only across. For mm-hmm. example, let's take the I of that follows creativity. That's innovation. But maybe you might argue your company needs just improving all the time. If they improve all the time, why do they need an innovation? Well, the Japanese, by the way, historically always improved every job. The Japanese worker was always asked, look at how you can do your work better, even if you can kill the job that you have, we will still keep you in the firm on another job. So Japan practiced improvement in the factory and in the office all the time, but that's not necessarily leading to innovations, brand new things. So we learn a lot by just making another look at the difference between being a leader and being a manager, being an L versus an M. So the book is rich in raising a whole lot of relationships for the company to think about.
Let's jump ahead to the chapter on rethinking competition. And I think this may be a surprise to a lot of people. Explain why it's important to collaborate with your direct and your indirect competitors, the people that you would normally be fighting against.
Well, there are some issues faced by a company that is faced by the whole industry. And no one company can, on its own, solve the problem. Let's take an example. More auto companies now are moving into making their version of the electric car. Mm-hmm. Now, the problem is, will there be enough chargers, charging stations available? Can one company making the electric car, which is Tesla, make enough stations around the country and the world, wherever it sells the car, to serve the purpose of charging your engine, your car? And the answer is, even there, Tesla is welcoming other companies making electric cars to either pay a rent to Tesla for using the Tesla chargers, or working with Tesla in areas where no chargers have been set up, so they would both share the cost. That's a very good example of where an individual company can benefit from working with its collaborators, as long as it is not interpreted as monopolistic behavior.
We don't want to get in trouble with the lawyers there. That's right.
Yeah.
So in the next chapter, you talk about navigating customers, and you write that only about 8% of consumers globally are committed to the brands they buy, and that marketers put a lot of effort and money into delighting customers, but sometimes they don't care because most make buying decisions automatically. And you then recommend companies need to develop a cumulative advantage. Can you explain what cumulative advantage means in that instance?
Well, maybe it should be singular, cumulative advantages. But
yes,
what we mean is, let's say a company is hanging its brand on one idea, that Coca-Cola makes you happy, or you should be drinking it with other people. There may be other reasons for a Coke too. Maybe just the taste. Maybe so. Every company has to see if it could design points of differentiation as well as points of parity. Now, let me explain the term. Every company has to match the basics that all the competitors are offering too. For example, this may be based on a coffee brand. Starbucks is going to make sure that whatever all the other coffee makers and stores offer in their coffee, that Starbucks is at par with that, those benefits. But if that's all it's par at, then it is a commodity. It's like any of the other coffees. So the company has to have differences as well as, that can't be matched by the competitors. And if you study Starbucks, and I've studied the model very carefully, they make just the place of the coffee an experience. Mm-hmm. You can come, you know that expression that Starbucks is your third home? Your
right.
First home is where you live. The second home is where you, your office or factory. And the third home is your Starbucks, where you can sit down with your computer and spend some time and see friends and so on. So they have differences from their competitors, and every company has to have cumulative advantages.
Yes. So the book outlines two different business orientations, and conservative versus progressive. Don't confuse those with the political terms. Explain, as part of that, what is meant by market-driven versus market driving?
Well, most marketing is market driven, and that comes from the notion that the purpose of marketing is to meet and satisfy needs. Okay, so then you're responding to a need. You're not creating that need. You're just responding to satisfying the need of the customer. You're driven by the customer's need. To be market driving is to realize the customer may have an interest in newer ideas. Now, you may remember Steve Jobs. He said that if we only meet needs, it's not enough. Mm-hmm. No one's going to ask for the smartphone with its beauty just because of a simple need. No one would make such a phone. If the need is simply for a phone, phones existed. But people had to be educated. You have to drive them to see the advantages of a life where you can use all these capacities put into one smartphone. So that's just an example that we must be, it goes along with this concept of entrepreneurial marketing, that we have to be thinking of new ways to expand our sites and our business.
Right. It's just, you have to go beyond saying, what do you want? Which is probably a good thing to begin with. But
you'd say when in the horse and buggy days, I want a faster horse.
Exactly. That doesn't eat as much.
That is not the answer.
Right. That's right. So one topic that's very important towards this entrepreneurial marketing and that I mentioned in Russ Klein's foreword is about converging departments within an organization. And I think everybody probably intellectually knows, that's a good idea. But can you explain why that is so important now and what the barriers are to achieving that?
A lot of departments in a company operate as a solo enterprise. It's a silo mentality, really, silo. Because they're so busy achieving their goals that it would be accidental or incidental to worry about how marketing should deal with finance. Finance has so many problems and issues themselves. I can't spend my time thinking about them and their problems. Now, in the smart best of companies, the CMO, the chief marketing officer, spends only 50% of his or her time making sure that the marketing group is working effectively. So what do they do with the other 50% of their time? Because they could have spent 100% of their time just working with the marketing department. Mm-hmm. The answer is they spend 50% of their time with the other departments. Because if marketing's head is not with a good standing with the head of finance, the head of information, the head of innovation, the head of other departments, the head of production, and so on. So the marketing CMO would be smart to leave half of the time to spend having lunch and talks with all the others that are a key to the success of marketing really working the way it's supposed to work. So that's what we mean by overcoming the silo mentality that afflicts so many companies.
Mm-hmm. Walking the halls, talking to people, listening.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So again, back to Russ, he mentioned that this book is a must read for like CEOs and CFOs and CIOs and other senior staff people. In an entrepreneurial marketing scenario, what role should leadership play that might be different from the past?
Well, we expect the leader to have a vision of where he or she thinks the company should be going. Because without that vision, various goals will take place, objectives will be enacted and so on, but they may not lead anywhere. Where do we want to be five? The question is simple. Where should we be in 5 years from now? And how do we get there? That's all. And if the CEO can answer that question, we'll call him or her a visionary, and that's the job of a leader.
Where do we want to be in 5 years? It's easy to say that, but it's really, really difficult, seemingly, for a lot of companies and CEOs to answer that question.
Yes, that's true. And it could be 2 years at least, but we need a direction in which we should go. And by the way, we always say that every plan has to be revised. Things change. Things happen that were not anticipated. A COVID comes up, or a climate change major problem comes up. So the question is there a vision for 2 or 5 years? And are you ready to change it when the indicators say it must be changed? But not to have a vision of where you should be going is even worse.
That brings to mind the quote that's attributed to General and later President Eisenhower, who said he had found plans to be worthless, but planning is indispensable.
Yes, I remember that. Yes.
Well, let's jump ahead before we wrap up here. A couple other questions. We talked about earlier about the silos and the importance of marketing and finance together. You go into great depth about the benefits of having an integrated relationship between marketing and finance. And I'm wondering if a lot of listeners or readers would have thought, boy, it's all we can do to get marketing and sales together. But could talk about the benefits of having an integrated relationship between marketing and finance. And you actually have an entire chapter on basically accounting and finance basics that every marketer should read. And it seems to me that if they read that chapter, they would be very conversant. They would be able to go to lunch repeatedly with their CFO and have really meaningful, helpful conversations going both ways. Talk about the benefits of having an integrated relationship between marketing and finance.
Well, the key idea there is not only to be respectful and friendly with the other side, but to work out a common model which will optimize the firm, and both agree to the firm, to the model which they help shape, and there will be less to dispute on. But let me give you a hard illustration. I was asked by the CMO, Chief Marketing Officer, of MasterCard being one of the top, along with Visa, credit card companies. And he's from India. He's the CMO. His name is Raja Manar. And Raja is brilliant as a CMO. And he said to the at MasterCard, to the CFO, let's get together. I'm going to appoint someone in my marketing department who's a finance person. And you appoint someone in your finance department who's a marketer. And let's all four of us work on a common model for knowing whether marketing budget should be increased or cut or stay the same. And he went into each region of the country in the world where MasterCard operates. And he said each regional group should work together between marketing and finance. And lo and behold, the success of MasterCard over these years when he's been CMO, I don't have the numbers. The numbers are in the book.
Oh, I have it right here. You write, MasterCard's brand value rose from $69 billion in 2013 to $112 billion in 2021.
Absolutely.
Jump right off the page. Great story.
So you
story.
Better bring marketing and finance together and and just talk to Raja Manar, who will help you go through this. Let me add that he wrote his own book. And his own book, I don't have the title.
Oh, it's Quantum Marketing.
Quantum Marketing.
Yeah.
And that's partly about this finance and marketing thing, but it's also mentioning 12 or 14 new technologies in marketing. You know, AI is very prominent now, especially the new thing for 2 years is ChatGPT. Mm-hmm. But he talks about all of these new things that a marketer, these are new tools, new technology tools for marketers. And so I recommend his book, quantum marketing.
Well, great. Yes, and it goes into great depth here in that chapter on uniting marketing and finance about some of the steps to do. It really can be done, and it was such a great story. Well, jumping ahead, this question may seem paradoxical and kind of harkens back to the last book, Marketing 5.0, that we had on the show. But talk about how technology can help companies actually be more human. You started to touch on this earlier on in the conversation.
Yes. We worry about everything done by impersonal technology in transactions that are just charged with emotion all the time. I often say that in consumer marketing, about the decision is made about 70% of the time on emotions and not just rationale factors and so on. But the basic thing is companies should welcome technology that will facilitate success, but also accompany technology with high touch. So the phrase is a wonderful phrase. You should be doing high tech and high touch. And that means human to human work. And that's what I have called even H2H marketing, where you have people talking to people openly and friendly and they both respect the technology as well.
Mm-hmm. So rather than simply trying to let the technology take over, it seemed like a question that companies could be asking is, okay, the technology is great. How can we use it to make us more human?
Yes.
So one other question it was a very interesting concept in the book about business ecosystems. And you started to touch on this earlier where we were talking about the charging stations with like a Tesla, for instance. You recommend that companies must become an active part of a business ecosystem, both conventional and digital. So can you explain what is meant by this ecosystem, perhaps versus a linear supply chain that we people may be more familiar with?
Well, you know, every company depends on an ecosystem itself, which is made up of customers, employees, suppliers, distributors, communities, and the interest of the planet and the planet surviving. So many things underlie success. It's not just a matter of a linear flow from A to B to C to D. All of these things have to be present and workable as a ecosystem. And now each entity in the ecosystem might be undergoing changes. Maybe your customers are not changing, but maybe employees are. Look at what's happening. Employees now want to work from home, not mm-hmm. in the office. And if you live in New York City, you'll know the big problem is empty offices. Mm-hmm. Now, it could be that your distributors have changed in their goals. Recognize that you rest your business on a complex ecosystem, with changes happening in any of those that may disrupt the way you do things, and you better be ready to be resilient and move with the changes.
Yes, and it seems like companies are in an ecosystem whether they realize it or not.
Yes.
So based on what you and the other authors have learned from various developments in recent years, what are some of the most important conditions you think we're facing?
Well, we would say that the customers are so sophisticated today. They can find out so much about your brand and other brands competing with you when they're making their choice. All they have to do, if they're going to choose a hotel, look up what previous users of that hotel say about their experience.
Perfect strangers.
Perfect. Yes, exactly. And you cannot outsmart today's customers. They have that cell phone right next to them when they're in the store, and you're pricing your product at a certain level. They're going to double check and see if the same product is available from a competitor for a lower price. And if it is, they'll show you on the cell phone that they can get 20% off from this other competitor, and it's your job to match it or deny matching it. But The other change is that the competitors are becoming more sophisticated, like you are. So why not they too? And then if you use a lot of collaborators in your business, I mean, by collaborators, you mean the agents who work for you, brokers and others, advertising agencies, they're all getting more sophisticated. And so along comes new digital technologies all the time. Are you aware of them? Are you at least seeing whether some of them are useful to you? And so all of these developments are occurring. And so watch your customers, competitors, collaborators, new technologies, and hire the most talented entrepreneurial people you can find.
Yes, that brings to mind a quote from the legendary ad man David Ogilvy, who you may have met over the years. Back in the 1950s or 60s, he was famous for saying, "The consumer is not a moron, she is your wife."
Yeah, right. That's the famous remark.
Yeah. So yeah. If readers took only one thing away from the book, Dr. Kotler, what would you hope it would be?
That being customer-driven and oriented is not enough. Because the marketing philosophy that came about, certainly in my own writings in 1967 and onwards and through the 16th editions, is know your customers and be close to satisfying them. But I believe there's more to that than meets the eye, that you really want a more entrepreneurial gaze at all the factors and the that affect the ecosystem that you're working with, and being ready to move around the pieces of the ecosystem that if it will create more advantage. So the point is, do what you can to get more entrepreneurial thinkers into your firm. Now, let me add one more thing. We haven't spent time on a part of the book that is very valuable to those marketers who do not know much about finance. Mm-hmm. We have some very strong chapters and material on understanding the balance sheet.
Yes.
Understanding the income statement, understanding margins, and a whole bunch of things that are not in the training of a marketer if that marketer only took courses on marketing. This is why when I teach marketing, I always say you should major in two subjects, marketing and finance. And the book will really supply that missing part. The next thing and last thing that I would like to say is I, of course, wish all of the listeners to this program the most success as marketers and as people in the goals they are going to pursue. There are two new books that I am just about finished publishing, and I want to mention them because they will also be life-expanding. The first book is called Regeneration, and it's coming out of work we did with the problem of dying cities, or sick cities. Namely, we were working at the time with Palermo, which is the capital of Sicily, a city with great treasures, going way back to the Greeks and the Romans and so on, and without enough money to preserve those treasures. But we've been working on how to regenerate Palermo and other cities. And if you look at just at the United States, you have so many small towns that have been abandoned by their industry or mm-hmm. companies. And so regeneration, we've worked into a whole model of how you can identify what is the cause of the weakness and how to raise more capital to remedy and bring new life into your location. The second book,
Dr. Kotler, I'm looking it up here. Is it Regeneration, the Future of Community in a Polycrisis World?
Well, if is our name on that, or is
yes,
that
a sir? You, Enrico Foglia, and Christian Sarkar.
Yes, that's it's already, in other words, listed.
Well, I did a Google search. I don't know.
Well, you're wonderful to work with, Doug, because that is the book. It means it exists now, because I knew it was going to be launched any day.
Oh, great.
And the you might look up another while you're there, which is called The Wicked Seven. And the reason for that book is we began to realize that the fundamental problems are seven that are holding back the world from achieving its goals. And of course, we control in climate change and everything else, but one of them is just the problem of hate, that hate is too present in the world, and what can we do, and how can we get back to love? And we talk about the six other problems, like nature. We are destroying nature. The Industrial Revolution essentially brought about wonderful things, but also at the cost of much nature. You know, deserts were not natural. You would have desert, you would have green land and plants and so on, but through various neglectful things, we parch our land and ruin it, and nothing grows. But nature, in many ways, we have dying species of various kinds. If we lose the bees, where are we? If the bees aren't around to make honey and so on and so forth. So a second one is nature is being destroyed. So we have the seven wicked ones, and I won't go into any details, but the book will be out shortly if it isn't out.
Oh, great. Yet. I've just brought up the website, wicked7.org, and it's the death of nature, inequality, hate and conflict, power and corruption, work and technology, health and livelihood, and population and migration. Wow.
Exactly. Those are the seven we deal with, and we have proposed, we consider a range of the solutions that have been said about each problem. For example, for inequality, we talk about 10 things we could do to make incomes and wealth a little better distributed. Mm-hmm. We do that for each of the seven wicked problems.
Well, interesting. And aside from the two books that you just mentioned that you've been working on, are there any new or upcoming books that you're looking forward to reading or coming out?
Well, unfortunately, that drives me to the latest book that I did come out with.
Oh, but, do
you
tell.
Were talking about others. Kellogg on Marketing.
Uh-huh.
It's the brand new third edition, unrelated to the first two, to update things that have happened in marketing from the most eminent business school in marketing in the country, and that's the Kellogg School. Mm-hmm. And it has 23 chapters, and every one of them will have answers to your questions if you're in business. The one chapter is called Creating Value to Disrupt Markets. And another chapter would be building strong brands, namely the latest we know about building strong brands. And another is strategic channel management, what we know about that, along with storytelling. So there's 23. I love you to read the chapter on the metaverse by the most distinguished member called Mohan Soni, dear friend of mine. It's the best chapter I've ever read on the fact the multiverse is going to be a very promising area for companies to consider.
Hmm. Interesting. Yes, I'm looking at it here. It came out April 2023, and it's you edited it along with Alexander Chernev?
Yes.
Oh, interesting. Wow.
And Alex wrote three of the essays in that book, and he's just so insightful.
Wow. Well, maybe I could get you or Alexander on here to talk about that book.
Sure.
Yeah. Maybe I'll need you to put in a good word for me, but at any rate, yeah.
You think of Alex, and it would be wonderful to have him, because he's been on top of selecting some of the best articles we would find. All of them are written by faculty members, current faculty members of Kellogg School of Marketing, Management and Marketing.
Well, I appreciate you mentioning that. I'll have to reach out to him. And I just so you know, I have had on the show over the years some Northwestern MBAs who were students of yours. So some of your students have gone on to write books and are continuing to do so. So,
and some of them are CEOs of big companies.
Yes.
I think the IBM woman, who is now retired, was one of our students.
Okay. Yes, I realize they don't just write marketing books. They go on and do other great things. So at marketingbookpodcast.com, we're going to include links to everything linkable that you've mentioned, including all the books, and I'll put a link to your website. And listeners, to win a copy of the book, please share this interview on LinkedIn, and I will send it. I will send that book to the listener who gets the most engagement about this interview with Dr. Kotler, as determined by a panel of experts consisting largely of me. So the book is Entrepreneurial Marketing: Beyond Professionalism to Creativity, Leadership, and Sustainability. The authors are Philip Kotler, Hermawan Kartajaya, Denhuan Hu, and Jackie Musri. Dr. Kotler, thank you very much for joining us again on the Marketing Book Podcast.
Thank you, Doug, very much. I always learn in talking to you about the fields we are interested in, and I look forward to our next meeting.
Thank you very much. I do too. And that closes the book on another episode of the Marketing Book Podcast. I hope you enjoyed it and found it helpful. Special thanks to this episode's sponsor, Future London Academy. Learn business strategy, finance, and leadership from Spotify, Wolf Olins, Monzo, Pentagram, AKQA, and others with Future London Academy's MBA for Design Leaders. 5 2-week modules in London and California. Only 30 spots are available. Apply now at bit.ly/future MBA. That's bit.ly/future MBA, or get the link at this episode's website page at marketingbookpodcast.com. And if you are one of the legions of listeners who have left an iTunes review, please let me return your kind favor by mailing you some Marketing Book Podcast stuff. Just send me your mailing address anywhere in the world and I'll drop it in the mail. And remember the words of the late, great Jim Rohn, who said, "Formal education will make you a living. Self-education will make you a fortune."